We have a message from your father, dear listener. You're adopted. It's the Good Trash Genre Cast, and we are so glad to see you all here.
Such
and,
a bizarre intro.
Well, this week's movie is Lockout, and that's one of the funnier lines in the entirety of the
film. That's right, yep.
And so we are the movie that seems to be somewhat forgettable. Yes, indeed. We're going to talk about Guy Pearce playing Bruce Willis in the movie Lockout. And we're going to have a lot of fun with that. But before we do that, we need to do some introductions. First of all, my name is Dustin Sells. I am a graduate student, 20th and 21st Century Studies, at the University of Central Oklahoma, still. To my left.
I am Arthur Gordon, and much like Christopher Lloyd in Clue, you can now call me Professor. Unlike Christopher Lloyd in Back to the Future, you can't call me Doctor.
It's true, true. To my right, sir.
I am Dalton Stewart. I have no title. I am really ready to be done with school.
Excellent, excellent.
And I still major in sociology, because apparently I thought at one point in my life you could make money doing that.
Yourself, sir.
Hello, my name is Kyle Davison. I am an English major at the University of Central Oklahoma, and I have an emphasis on creative writing.
Excellent, excellent. So glad to be gathered around the chair with you all, and here in the swanky Stewart home.
For the final time.
For the last time, before school starts.
It's been a really weird little run, but it was kind of nice.
And on a personal note, I'd like to welcome Mr. Arthur Gordon back. We missed him last week.
It was sad.
It was sad in that I needed help. But that goes on the outtakes, ladies and gentlemen. But we're moving on.
He didn't have Arthur to help reel me and our guest, our interviewee in. That's what happens when you tell someone you're interviewing them. They feel like they can be a little self-indulgent.
Well, they're supposed to.
We love you, Nick.
And we are so glad to have had Nick Sanford on last week. This week's movie is the movie Lockout. We need to have a synopsis given to us. That way, the listener who has not seen the film, and I would recommend, again, spoilers ahoy, dear listener, there are always going to be spoilers on the show, but just in case.
How many of you listen to this show without actually watching the movies we're talking about?
That would be a great Twitter question.
I'm real curious. There you are.
I'd like to hear that. But, without any further ado, the voice of the cinema, Mr. Arthur Gordon, let us hear that synopsis.
A man, wrongly convicted of conspiracy to commit espionage against the U.S., is offered his freedom if he can rescue the president's daughter from an outer space prison taken over by violent inmates. Period.
Period.
That's really a perfect voice for this film.
It is in a world where prisons are in outer space.
And Guy Pearce is on the ground.
Being patrolled by the LOPD.
Oh, no.
Why do they need a whole police department for low orbit? The only thing in outer space
is a station.
MS-1. And nobody's ever supposed to burn.
My bigger question is, why are the inmates wearing inmate jackets? Is that like a huge tourist thing? Or like a lot of people
Hey,
look at the inmates, honey.
I think they're pretty clear, like, who is in prison and who is a guard. Also, they're cryogenically frozen. There's a lot of problems with this movie.
Yeah, it's like,
let's go around the table before we. I mean, obviously, we are a little fired up about the plausibility of some of the action pieces in this film and dramatic devices. But let's go ahead and give the thumbs up, thumbs down, round the table. What works? What doesn't work? And then we'll move into some deeper analysis. I begin to my right, Mr. Dalton Stewart. What say ye?
Well, when thinking about Escape from Space Prison, starring Kurt Russell as Snake Plissken, as portrayed by Guy Pearce, portraying Bruce Willis, that's really about the only thing that works for this film, is Guy Pearce. And sadly, there's just not enough Guy Pearce in this movie. You'd think they figured out, like, early on, that the biggest strength of this film is Guy Pearce. And they really seem like they want to hide him away from us for a lot of this movie. There's a lot of, like, really kind of dumb and asinine subplots that keep coming up. And it's just like, stop. What are you doing? We don't care about anything but watching Guy Pearce be smarmy and kick ass. This is just not a good movie. I didn't hate it. I mean, it was just so mediocre that I couldn't even fathom hate for it. But man, there's a lot of broken stuff in this movie. I don't want to unwatch it.
Right. Like the Hebrew Hammer, which I'd want that time back. Excellent, excellent point. Let's move on around. Mr. Kyle Davison, what say you, sir?
All right. I actually really enjoyed this movie.
Kyle loves everything.
The reason why I enjoyed it is just because it was pure fun. Like, I'm a big fan of being able to watch a movie where I can just turn my brain off and just enjoy the nonsense and the ridiculousness and you know, Guy Pearce being the badass of the movie.
He was wonderful.
He was awesome.
I'm a
big Guy Pearce fan. Like, I used to, like, not really think too much of him. And then a couple weeks ago, I watched Lawless. And he was an amazing bad guy. Like, he was the best part of that movie.
Best supporting crazy eyes.
Yes. And
he is ugly in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
By the by.
The bald spot in his part, weird.
Yeah.
Weird. Anyway.
But, yeah, watching this movie, it was, you know, pure fun. The action was really good. CGI.
Oh, man.
Not like, first, like, 10 minutes of that movie, when he escapes the window and gets on the bike and drives off.
I was just the whole time, I was, please, is this going to get better?
I felt like I was watching the 1982 original Tron.
yeah, it was rough.
But, like, it was really good. Like I said, I was telling you earlier, I watched it at 3 a.m. this morning. And definitely didn't make me want to go to sleep.
It's kind of the perfect time to watch this movie.
Yeah, it may indeed be.
But the main thing that I had about this movie is I kind of wish that it wasn't a movie. I kind of wish it was a video game.
Yeah, I mean, plot-wise...
Like, it would have made, like, a perfect video game.
Yeah.
Well, I have more to say about that later. That's an excellent observation, sir. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what do you say? Thumbs up, thumbs down? What works, what doesn't work?
I'm going to say one thumb up. I kind of enjoyed it. Love, it was just fun. Obviously, the visual style influenced by Luc Besson.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Guy Pearce playing Mark Wahlberg.
I
thought it was awesome.
All right.
I thought it was beautiful, you know.
Right. In The Departed, specifically.
Yeah, it was a blast. And I'm like you, I don't wish I didn't watch it. I thought it was fun. I had a long day, and so, you know, I watched it right after work and stuff, and I was kind of laying on the couch watching it. It was just a little, some funny lines, things like that.
I've had rougher watches in the course of doing this show.
True.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Hellraiser.
So what did I think of Super Mario in Space? saving the princess.
Man, we just think we're real clever tonight, don't we?
That's it. It's Super Mario in Space with about the same level of character development and the same real dramatic impetus.
It's-a-me, Guy!
The Unwatch, I think, is an excellent way to describe it, though. I don't wish I unwatched it.
Yeah.
This is a movie, really would have been my first time watch this week if we had just happened to have had to figure out something to watch when the whole family was gathered together at Christmas that I thought would appeal across, you know, all those preferences. I thought, big, loud action movie. Sounds like fun. So we watched it. No one...
Just kind of thinking that this would be a good fun Friends movie.
Yeah.
Friends, you know.
It's a party movie. Yeah. It's background noise.
Yeah.
I gotta say, well, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's lesser Besson, I mean, for sure. And of course, he's not the director. Yeah. He's a producer and a creative,
his creative
mind.
It was a total dude flick.
Behind it, no doubt. No doubt it was. I mean, you know, of course, we could go on and on when we get into analysis about misogyny, which I will not. But there's a little bit.
Things could be said. And I'm just going to leave it alone.
Yeah. But it is a fun popcorn movie. It is a particularly dumb, fun popcorn movie. Big, loud, dumb, just what can we do? What's in that case? Is it a good luck case? Because what Guy Pearce does when he runs away with the case, it must be magic good luck.
Shattered femurs for days the man should have.
This, I think, is the same case from Pulp Fiction.
Must be.
I think it is.
And it's got Elvis's suit in it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Whatever's in it.
Well, that would do that.
It's got MacGuffin in it.
Yeah.
It does. It's full of MacGuffin.
It holds Marcellus Wallace's soul.
You got your MacGuffin in my briefcase.
So let's move on and let's do some analysis. Mr. Dalton Stewart, what bring you, sir?
Dustin, as you pointed out, there are some potentially problematic misogynistic issues with this film.
Potentially.
But it's just so dumb. Well,
numb the nerve. Would you like some for your mouth?
The film is so dumb that it doesn't even matter. Like, it's so dumb that it can't even be misogynistic because it's that dumb. I wouldn't even say that. And I think the film knows what it's up to. I mean, I think that's what I had to bring to the table about this film. It knows what it's trying to make. It's trying to make an 80s film. I genuinely think they were like, you know what would be fun? We've got $5 million to drop. Because clearly they didn't spend any more than that on this at all.
I looked it up. The budget of the movie was $20 million.
Thank you. I guarantee you at least half of that was Guy Pearce's salary.
Yeah. Don't forget Maggie Grace.
Guy Pierce was like, hey, I've got a couple of weeks to kill. I would like to do some running and jumping and some shooting and say some jokes. I'd say probably the most artistic flourish in this film is the opening credits where Guy Pierce's head is punched out of frame and the titles pop up. That was fun. And when that happened, I was
beat
like,
up by a guy called Rupert.
Well, that opening scene's amazing.
It's good.
I was really excited. I was like,
cigarette and it breaks.
It just breaks in half and he gets another one out. You know, that first 5 minutes, I thought, oh, hey, this is going to be a good movie. And the first fight ends with him jerking the gun towards him on the bedsheet and catching it and just kind of like a really weird anticlimactic end of the fight. And I thought, wow, this is going to be a solid film. And really, it's just kind of downhill from there.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. I mean, there's some fun performances from some of the supporting cast, villains, and...
Yeah, whoever was the main bad guy kind of reminded me of Voss from Far Cry 3.
Yeah! Yes, absolutely. That was weird, because I'd stopped playing Far Cry 3 for the hour and a half it took me to watch this film, and yeah, that was weird. But fun supporting Crazy Eyes all around, and Guy Pearce had a good time. But honestly, that's all I have to say about this film. I got nothing else.
Okay, excellent. That is more than I can expect from a movie like this.
Exactly.
So you're done quite well, sir. Mr. Kyle Davison, what do you bring to the show?
All right, the one thing that I noticed about this movie is that I could have watched it on mute and still known exactly what was going on the entire time. But I'm glad
you'd
I didn't.
Have missed all the one-liners, though.
Exactly. I'm glad I didn't, because Guy Pierce.
Guy Pierce is very fierce in this movie.
Guy Pierce was very hilarious with his little quips and his one-liners. I
think that the look on his face was smarmy enough to get the point across, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the whole thing about his name, how like throughout the entire movie, they're just like, "What's your name?" Snow. Because will you tell me what your name is if we get out of here? Really? Yeah, and it's Snow. And then at the very, very end, you finally find out what his name is. And it's like the most like non-action-y first name you could ever think of.
Dad was a big John Wayne fan.
Yeah, Marion. I mean,
Marion Snow.
pretty made Marion. I think that's pretty funny.
That was a pretty solid joke, actually. The film ends on a really solid joke.
There's some good dialogue right
there. The film ends on a really solid joke.
I love the ending banter as they're walking away.
I don't want to ruin that joke for you, listener, in case you didn't watch it, but the film ends on a pretty solid comic beat, I gotta say.
Yes, indeed.
But other than what I said earlier about how I kind of wish this movie was a video game instead of a movie, that's pretty much the only analysis I have for it, besides the fact that it's just dumb fun.
Excellent. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what say you, sir?
Well, I think we're hitting on it. Dalton, you got really close. This movie knows what it's doing. It's very tongue-in-cheek. I think it's not trying to be an 80s movie. I think it's being an homage and a running commentary on all of those 80s action hero movies. Even naming him after John Wayne, I think, is kind of a key to this point. But everything that happens either is exactly told to us, or the tropes come into effect and then they comment on them. But the very opening, I hated the opening. I hated the chase into the
on the highway.
I hated that.
Oh, it was so bad.
Does he do? He swings from the building and hits the window. What happens when the hero hits the window?
Oh, he goes through.
He goes through. Crack, he falls to the ground.
Which is pretty great.
And lives.
And lives, yeah.
Shattered femurs for days.
So what, I mean,
that lasts longer than days, you know, right?
He should have died in that movie at least 5 times and he didn't.
But the line's like, you know, the bad guy, the sane one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The quote, sane, unquote. You know, he says, when he shoots one tech, he says, hopefully, this will short-circuit the inevitable, it can't be done.
I really did like that
beat. I think it's the same bad guy, when he puts the gun to the back of Snow's head, mm-hmm. he says, I hate when that happens.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And those kind of things just keep happening throughout. Even Pierce's shirt says extremely offensive,
mm-hmm.
relating to his character and the way he's going to present himself.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Pierce runs down the plot when they tell him the mission. Runs down the exact plot of what's going to happen, how the movie's going to play out. So it adds a bit of cheekiness and this tongue-in-cheek feel. I thought Heidel was a nice reference to De Niro. in Taxi Driver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Look.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
I didn't even think about that.
No.
it's kind of going back. The whole thing is absurdist, but it works. I think it works so well for it's what it's doing. I thought another Luc Besson trope was we had a poorly acted president. A terribly acted president.
Oh,
here.
So bad.
I think there's another movie that struggled with tone.
I think an ineffectual president is
film.
A thing he does, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that there was a problem with tone, which I had a problem with that in another film related to Luc Besson that we did earlier in the season.
You mean the excellent film?
You can call it what you
will. I think he means the masterpiece of the 90s, starring Bruce Willis as Bruce Willis, The Fifth Element, but we'll move on from that comment.
With all of the tongue-in-cheek dialogue and the way it plays itself, I read it as a commentary on all of those, the one-man army,
mm-hmm.
the one-man, you know, there's only one man that can do it.
And it's Marion Snow.
You know, and we got, you know, Bond and Jet Li and Jackie Chan, the Die Hard movies, you know, Schwarzenegger. Obviously, that is all here. It's all influenced.
Absolutely.
So I think this is part homage and part... You know, and the out of place, that was what it was, the out of place hero. He calls him an 80s hero.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So, nobody smokes anymore!
Yeah. And so, I kind of like it and respected it for that. And I think, mostly, I think it's going to be forgettable, but I think it was a valiant attempt at doing something.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
I kind of want to get your opinion on this, because I'm sure this is up your alley. I know there is a term for it when a victim... builds this connection with their captor.
Stockholm Syndrome?
Yes. That's is there me. Something similar when the victim develops that exact same relationship with her hero?
It's called being a panty dropper.
And is that the technical term?
That's the technical term.
Marion Snow, panty dropper.
Yeah, yeah. It comes after his name on his business cards. Marion Snow, CIA operative. Panty dropper. I know what you're picking up on, though, because
there's
Marion's kind of a douchebag.
A little bit, kind of.
And I might be underselling the extent of that. I know what you're picking up on, and I think that's called action movie. And that's just what happens.
Yeah.
It turns out if you're that mean to a woman in real life, she actually will sleep with you. So good portrayal.
Very mean to her, but you rescue her.
So
under siege ensues.
Hold her down.
Because these are the things that happen in action films. That's something good you're picking up on, Arthur. And I'm sure papers have been written by people smarter than me about this trope that frequently comes up in action film.
I'm playing the part of Dalton tonight. I've got one more thing to say.
Oh.
That is
I don't know.
Go on.
I don't know that I've cringed that much in an epidural scene when he puts that needle to the middle of her eye.
Wow. Yeah. That's usually where you get a cutaway in most films, and I guess that's where all of their effects budget went, was showing the needle puncture her eyeball.
They shot that first, and they're like, how are we going to do this opening?
Oh, God, now we're out of money.
I was very surprised by the PG-13 rating of this movie.
Well, I don't think there's anything else in this movie. I don't think there's much language.
It's fairly bloodless, but man, there are some violent deaths.
Yeah, and the one F-bomb was in the first, you know, like 2 minutes of the
movie. So brilliant, though. Gosh, good usage of your one F-word PG-13 rating.
Okay, Dustin, what do you bring?
Well, I guess, again, looking at the film as Super Mario Brothers in space... what you find, I think, first of all, is that it is an absolute fairy tale. I mean, talk about the princess, the king's daughter, been captured by a dragon, and you must go into the dragon's lair and face all those difficulties and bring the daughter home. I mean, it couldn't get more basic fantasy trope than that. And we've talked a lot about action movie tropes. I mean, the thing is cannibalistic as a film. It's trope after trope after trope after trope. However, what I do have to say is that it's got enough, I guess, critical distance from the American action film to really make a bigger satire of it than something like The Expendables, which purports to do that sort of thing, but really doesn't do it in the same kind of way. Because it's a French movie. This is Canal Plus. This is not Paramount, not Universal. And for that, I applaud an effort outside of Hollywood to make a big, loud Hollywood action blockbuster that really lampoons the big, loud Hollywood action blockbuster.
Unfortunately, they didn't do it very well.
No, they didn't.
It turns out we're actually it's harder to do those shitty movies we make than you'd think.
Because it takes a lot of talent. Yeah.
Well,
Michael Bay.
Well, no, it takes a lot of money. It's what it comes down to. Is the difference between this and, say, Avengers, which has a much better script, but so we're just talking pure special effects. And Transformers.
It's about $200 million.
It's about $200 million, and what you can do with the computers to make the explosions and or special effects sequences work a little bit better.
Oh yeah,
and that's really where a lot of the production difference lies in the movie, is that there's just a gargantuan amount of money in Hollywood. And it is not possessed in other places, which is part of the reason why I think some more interesting films happen outside of Hollywood, independent film in America or abroad in their studio systems, because they have to work a lot more creatively, for one reason.
Absolutely.
And for a second, they are forced to tell more personal human stories, because they can't rely on all the just throwing money at a screen to make things look pretty for us. And so, in that nature, and with that respect only, do I applaud the film. Otherwise, I go, that was fun. If somebody said, hey, we're watching Lockout, you know, I'd say, oh, I've seen that. I'll sit down. And where's the popcorn?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm at on the movie. So, final verdict time. Shall we put it on the shelf? Shall we throw it in the trash? What else? Or instead? Mr. Dalton Stewart.
I say extract the scenes featuring Smarmy Guy Pierce and put them into a much better film and throw the rest of it away. Instead, I recommend you check out a very similar film from this year as well, Dread. Basically the same movie, and it's just made for a relatively similar amount of money. That's kind of a more serious but still very tongue-in-cheek look at the American action film and the fascism and violence inherent in that sort of thing. That has its cake and eats it, too.
Starring
Carl Urban and his chin.
As Sylvester Stallone.
That was a film, listener, you heard me very excited about when it came out several episodes back now. That film is now available to watch on home media, so I strongly recommend you watch that and not Lockout.
Mr. Kyle Davison, what do you say?
All right, even though it was a fun sci-fi action movie, I'm going to throw it right in the trash where it belongs and recommend that you watch a sci-fi action movie with the brain, also known as Looper.
Also from this year. Continue.
Solid pick.
Well, but don't put it in the trash. I say, go buy some popcorn, rent this movie for a night, but along with it, why don't we show the women some love and watch a one-woman army film? Like Salt or Haywire, which I thought were both fun films.
I enjoy Haywire a lot.
Do a little back-to-back there. And then maybe go out and read something like Stephen King's The Gunslinger, which features something of a one-man army himself.
Trash movie, because it's on Netflix. And that's really where this movie belongs. I mean, this is one of those 6 months to release. After release date, actually, even before release date, this movie should be on Netflix.
Yeah, it should be straight.
I mean, that's kind of...
Straight to VOD.
Netflix. Straight
VOD
to
VOD and Netflix, yeah.
I mean, that's what we're looking at as far as the overall quality. Again, it's fun, you know? If you've got people over, you've got time to kill.
Yeah.
I don't say don't watch this movie, but I say don't buy it.
Don't seek it out.
Don't spend money on something like this. What I would say to watch instead is go watch The Fifth Element. You know, watch Luc Besson do what he does.
Yeah.
And
dig it.
Watch all that kind of crazy, slapstick, wacky, fun, sci-fi action stuff in something that is a much, much prettier package and is a much more effective overall.
It's hot.
Isn't it, though? So that would be my recommendation. Well, let's move on and let's do our game of the week. Well, first, before we do our game, we'll have to do some listener feedback because nearly all of our feedback pertains to said game. The game this week is we're going to do the retrospective on the year 2012, and we're going to give our top five movies and why. But we asked the interwebs, and the interwebs gave us back answers. And so I begin with Mr. Dalton Stewart.
Coming in from the Twitter, Dustin was able to corral a couple of responses to this question for us from... filmmaker, friend of the show, and two-time guest host, Nick Sanford, on Twitter. He gave us a top seven, starting from the top to the bottom. Dark Knight Rises, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, The Master, Silver Linings Playbook, Django Unchained, Pi, and Lincoln. Also coming in from the Twitter, from Steve Nelson, at ShinyPastor on Twitter, he said, merely Dark Knight Rises.
Excellent, excellent. And that we've got a lot of, those are a lot of great movies that have come out this year.
Oh, I'm sorry, I apologize. We do have one more thing coming in from the Twitter. That would be Shane Arrington responding to our question of the horror film trifecta.
Oh, something yes, that came indeed. Up last week. Yes.
Shane says The Shining, The Exorcist, and Alien. I'm going to have to agree with him on that one. Off the top of my head, I'm saying that's a pretty solid trifecta. I might try to branch out in terms of older and newer, and, you know, seeing as that that's kind of a cluster of the decade of the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I'd say a very, very solid pick, Shane, for three very good horror films.
Outstanding. Well, let's get on and do what we do. We're going to make lists. And which are completely meaningless.
Oh, we have a podcast about film. You kind of have to do a top list.
Gotta make lists. And, you know, list making itself is about the person making the list. It's not about the content found in the list. Now, I don't know what the other guys have prepared, but the list I prepared are my favorite movies of 2012 that I would consider to be the best movies. And that does not mean that Oscar would agree.
Mine was constructed in a similar fashion.
And same here. So, well, okay, there we go. So you're going to hear a little bit more about us and our tastes. We do know a thing or two about movies.
You know,
and
a little bit.
I think our opinions are things to be considered, but as we say at the end of every show, watch some movies and make up your own doggone mind and tell us what you think about those movies. And we're going to go through our fives around the table, our fours, our threes, our twos, and our ones, and we'll see what overlap will come about. So, I begin to my right, Mr. Del Stewart.
My pick for number five is a film I actually forgot came out this year. It wasn't a film I was able to catch in theaters. It's called Goon, starring Sean William Scott, Liev Schreiber, and Allison Pill from way back at the beginning of the year. It premiered at Sundance. It's a little film about hockey. Which is weird. I'm not a sports movie guy, but it's a film with a lot of heart. It stars Sean William Scott as a lovable giant with a heart of gold who's really good at only one thing, and that's being a sweetheart and whooping some ass. For a small Canadian hockey team, after defending his brother from a verbally abusive and homophobic hockey player that's actually playing on the ice. He comes in the stands and verbally comes at Sean William Scott's brother and proceeds to smash the hockey player's helmet with his bare hands. And just purely because that guy did something that wasn't very nice. And it's just a really sweet film without being saccharine at all. It's filthy, it's violent, and heartwarming. And those are things that you don't usually put together in one sense to describe a film. And it was just something that I thought was a really just solid film and one I think deserves more love than it got this year. So that's my pick for number five.
Excellent pick. Mr. Kyle Davis.
All right, well, my number five is a movie that came out at the very beginning of 2012, The Grey, with Liam Neeson. The reason why I like this movie so much is I went and saw this with my dad in theaters, and I think it is, like, the perfect father-son movie to go see. Of course, you know, older. Father and older son. But I really enjoyed it. I'm a big Liam Neeson fan. Great story, great action. Not gonna lie, the ending brought a tear to my eye. But yeah, all in all, I would have to say The Grey is my number five.
Solid pick. Mr. Arthur Gordon.
My number five is gonna go to Django, Mr. Tarantino. Movie features some phenomenal writing, some great acting. Tarantino's not pulling any punches. He is right there in our faces and delivering some very, very powerful statements about violence and humanity, and I think he does it very well with Django.
My number five also was Django Unchained. It is the most important Hollywood movie of the 21st century so far, I would say, but it's not necessarily my favorite movie of this year or of the century or of ever, and it is a very, very important film that I think people need to look at and think about and to be devastated by. In a good way.
Quite.
And so I think that. It is brilliant. And what's marvelous about the movie is that there's a lot of movies that are important. There are a lot of movies that are challenging in particular ways. Tarantino has this ability to be wickedly entertaining whilst doing that. And I think that's part of the brilliance and the mastery of that particular film.
Something many filmmakers are struggle at and can learn from.
So let's move on to number four, Mr. Dalton Stewart.
My number four is a cheat. My number four goes to The Dark Knight Rises / The Avengers. I couldn't have two superhero films on my top five.
Well, it's okay, because it's the same movie.
Well, they're companion pieces. They both deal with the same kind of plot, the same kind of ground. One does it in a much more fun way, and one does it in a much more epic and grand and thoughtful way. Both of these are films that have started to have kind of a backlash against them since the summer. Dark Knight Rises kind of almost immediately after it came out. Film some people found more flawed than others. The Avengers being a fun film, it kind of took a little bit longer for the tree to swing around on that one. But I still think they are both very solid films, and both kind of, if you look back at the year 2012, will be a solid landmarker for where big-budget Hollywood cinema was in this year. And kind of, they're both sort of a culmination of the last 15 years or so of superhero movies, and honestly, they're just both really fun. You couldn't do better big-budget action films than these two films from this year, and that's all I've got to say about them, because we've talked and ranted and raved about both of these films quite a bit on the show already.
Excellent, excellent. Mr. Kyle Davidson, you're number four.
My number four would have to be The Silver Linings Playbook. Now, about this movie, I knew nothing about it at all when it came out. I was sitting in my dorm room, and I was putting off writing my contemporary American literature paper.
As one does.
And as one is wont to do.
And I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to go see a movie. So, I looked up in Silver Linings Playbook. Don't really know much about this, but I'm going to check it out. So I sat down in the theater. I was the only person in that theater. Me, myself, and I. No one else. And it was amazing. That is the first time that has ever happened to me. Never been in a theater by myself. And as soon as it started, you know, you find out right off the bat that Bradley Cooper's more than just a pretty face. He can actually act, and this movie really shows that.
It's debatable.
You shut your mouth. This is Kyle's turn to talk. And
welcome to the show, Kyle.
We've known each
other. You're invited back.
All four of the main actors, you know, Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro, and the woman that plays his mother, whose name I cannot remember.
Jackie Weaver.
Jackie Weaver? Okay. Today that all four of them are nominated for Academy Awards.
It's been a long time since that happened.
Mm-hmm. And it was just a very enjoyable movie, and it's definitely going on my shelf when it comes out to DVD.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Mr. Arthur Gordon, you're number four.
A, I think it was really creepy that Dalton read my mind on that Animal Kingdom thing. B, my number four also goes to Silver Linings Playbook. A phenomenal movie, fantastic acting, some great writing, some great direction. I praised it a couple weeks ago. David O. Russell can build a tense family situation like no other. And I think he really does well with family dramas. I think, you know, we see Bradley Cooper can act, but I think we see an award-winning performance from Jennifer Lawrence, who
definitely.
I think deserves
definitely
any award given out this season.
She's also beautiful.
Doesn't hurt. My number four is a movie called Beasts of the Southern Wild, and really, really enjoyed that movie.
I've been meaning to get around to it.
It's kind of like the American Pan's Labyrinth, dealing with a fantasy post-Katrina type world that doesn't actually exist.
It's a film I've been looking forward to checking out for quite some time.
Some of the most beautiful imagery I've seen. It is this great combination of Danny Boyle's, not necessarily digital, but that realist handheld style photography and magical realism a la Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
How you do those things together and make it work is pretty brilliant and amazing. And again, there are images of this little girl carrying sparklers that are... I'm still smiling when I think about it. I mean, it's a very, very lovely, beautiful film. It's got something to say. It asks some important questions. And it is one of those movies, I think, that would reward continued viewings because the meanings of the movie probably depend more on the viewer than they do on what's actually embedded in the text. And I think it's one of those that will change and challenge you as you age and continue through life. So, great movie. And that's my number 4. Let's move on and do our number 3 picks. Mr. Dalton Stewart.
Tropes are something that's come up quite a few times already tonight. My number 3 pick being the tropiest film of the year, Cabin in the Woods. The single most fun I had in a theater in 2012. I don't revisit films very often. This is a film I saw twice in theaters. That's fairly rare for me. Anyone who knows me personally knows that. Yeah, it was just so wonderful. And a film that I continue to say I don't want to say a whole lot about because I don't want to ruin the experience for anyone else. On a cast, then Cabin in the Woods. It's fun, it's funny, it's genuinely scary in a couple of spots, and it's just a hell of a good movie from Drew Goddard and my man, Joss Whedon. Please check it out if you haven't already, listener.
Cabin in the Woods definitely made my honorable mention list. I like that movie a lot.
It's a solid movie.
Mr. Kyle Davison.
All right, number 3 is The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
I want to see that movie.
Oh, it was very, very good. Another movie that I went and saw instead of writing a contemporary American literature paper.
Huh.
As ones want to do.
I grew up reading the novel. I actually relate to it a lot because when I was in 9th grade, I wasn't the most popular of students. Didn't have a lot of friends. I hated the crap out of this guy sitting next to me. We didn't really become friends until...
It's me.
Yeah.
It's I mean, are you surprised?
I hated the crap out of him until high school. But
I was like, not. insert Arthur Lyne now.
It's very, very heartwarming. Very. It hits very close to home for, you know, most, you know, young adult viewers. A very good performance turned in by Emma Watson, who's finally getting out of her Harry Potter. Her Harry Potter phase. And Logan Lerman, actually. He was the main character. And you might have seen him in a few other movies, like 2009's Gamer, and last year's remake of The Three Musketeers, where he played D'Artagnan. Not very good performances, but he actually turned in a very heartwarming and very gripping performance as the main character in this movie. And it was just an all-around good movie, another movie that brought a tear to my eye, but I'm a big softie when it comes to movies. But, yes, Perks of Being a Wallflower, number 3.
Musically, I'm very interested in this movie, because it's that early 90s sort of music, which is a very important time
for me. Tell us about the early 90s, Paul!
And I understand there's a Cocteau Twins reference that might make me nuts, but I don't really know anything more about it than that, but I was told...
I'm not going to tell you anything more.
Okay, there is something there. Yes. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Your number 3, Arthur Gordon.
Man, Perks is good. It makes my honorable mentions list, for sure. Go check it out. My number 3 goes to Nolan and Dark Knight Rises. I think it was a perfect ending for that trilogy. The performance is all around. I love Tom Hardy.
Oh, yes.
And I think this is the best Bale, Bruce Wayne, Batman Absolutely. Performance of all 3 films. And everybody's a scene stealer here. Michael Caine for his 15 minutes. You know, oh my God, Gary Oldman.
Gary Joseph Oldman. Gordon-Levitt. Once
again. You know, no big deal. That old British guy,
Michael Caine.
No, the other one.
Michael Caine.
No, the other one.
Tom Hardy.
No, the other one.
Not the Christian leather Bale. Not the leather sack of tears. The one with the stash.
That mustache. Is that a real? Is that him?
Do we I know? Think so.
It is him in the second 2 movies. In the first movies, it is a prosthetic.
Okay.
I had to move this up my list, I think, especially for this thing, just because I saw it three or 4 times in theaters.
It just punches you in the gut
every
time.
Yeah. I don't know that I did not cry when we get the eulogy at the end, or the goodbye.
I certainly did. My top 10. My number 3 is Moonrise Kingdom. Wes Anderson film.
Right there.
And
I haven't caught up with it yet. It's literally sitting next to my DVD player right now.
It is just the prettiest movie. Every single shot is so composed. It is a movie I smiled throughout. I never stopped smiling. Every bit of it was just cute and sweet and not particularly true necessarily or real. But it's just so much fun to watch. Yeah. And again, it's just so lovely to look at. And I was cheerful the whole time while seeing
Moonrise
it.
Moonrise landed at number 6 on my overall list. I really enjoyed it when it came out. And at least for, through the summer before, you know, Dark Knight Rises was probably one of the best movies of the year. And so.
Yeah. Narrowly nudged out.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to number 2. We're getting closer to the top. Mr. Dalton Stewart.
Listener, I do want to go ahead and take a moment. I have ripped on it a few times, both today and when Arthur brought it up a few weeks ago. Silver Linings Playbook did make my honorable mentions. I did want to take a moment to say that brief addendum. Despite my problems with the film, mostly being that it is just a romantic comedy, gussied up as something more than that, I think it is a very solid film, and I don't want to belittle it for its skill and the skill of all involved. My number 2 is Django Unchained. I'm not going to say anything about it, because I talked for about a half an hour 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, good fair movie. Enough. Good pick.
Django Unchained.
That's all you need to know.
Get some.
Mr. Kyle Davison.
All right, well, there are two movies that are fighting for my number 2 spot, so I'm going to go ahead and name both of them. It's a tie. Django Unchained and The Dark Knight Rises. Yes, the two have nothing in common, but the reason why is because they were both highly anticipated movies.
Really good European actors.
Statement about race and power in America?
Revenge after a terrible violent act?
We could go for days.
All right, well, I was just proven wrong. But both of these movies were very highly anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched both of them, and of course, midnight showings on both.
Mm.
Oh, wait, no, never mind. I didn't see the midnight on Django. I saw it opening day on Christmas. First movie I ever saw on Christmas. But both of these movies lived up to their expectations that I had, the very high expectations that I had for both of them. And I wasn't disappointed at all. So Django Unchained and The Dark Knight Rises.
Excellent.
Also, I have to say something about The Dark Knight Rises. I happen to have a totally heterosexual man crush on Mr. Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
It's pretty outrageous. He won't shut up about it.
And newly created character for The Dark Knight Rises, really, I was a really big fan of it, and I thought that even though it was made up, it fit in rather well, and that was one thing that I was really impressed by, Christopher Nolan.
Excellent, excellent. Mr. Arthur Gordon, you're number 2.
I had 2 movies here. My original was going to be more of a technical list, and what I thought was just one of the best movies of the year, and it was going to be Zero Dark Thirty at number 2.
Mm.
But since we're putting that little human connection in there, it's Cabin in the Woods. Easily. Like Dalton said, I don't know that there was a more fun movie to see in theaters.
Oh,
as soon as I was done...
You have to see this movie with a group of people. You really do.
Yeah.
As soon as I was done in the theater, I wanted to go back and watch it again. Like a roller coaster.
I immediately started texting people and saying,
so,
who wants to go back?
Yeah. And I bought it on DVD as soon as it came out, and I've watched it 3 or 4 times since then. It's easily one of the
It's really the fun to watch that movie with people who have never seen it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Good pick. I love Cabin in the Woods. I really,
Dude,
really
You said a major top 10, probably?
Made my top 10. Just not the top 5.
Okay, no,
yeah,
that's fine.
And
it's definitely in my top 10.
And it's hard for me. I'm honestly, when we talk about the top 5, I have my 5 favorite movies of the year. I mean, it's hard. I mean, I can vacillate this list back and forth all day long, probably. But my number 2, when I finalized it, was Life of Pi.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be more said about it later. But best 3D use since the new 3D revolution in cinema. And just a really, really wonderful story and really challenging film as far as what one's preconceptions are about violence, about truth, about faith, spirituality, and the problem of evil in the world. It's really, really solid movie, and it's definitely a solid top movie of the year. Mr. Dalton Stewart, let's move on. Drum roll, please. Mr. Dalton Stewart, your number 1 film.
This film was not my number 1. In fact, it was my number 5 for a while. And I just, the more I thought about it, the more I kept coming back to it. It's The Grey. For a lot of the same reasons that Dustin picked The Life of Pi for number 2. More than the reasons Kyle's already mentioned, technically, acting, and it's a great thriller. And I also saw it with my father, actually. It's just a really powerful film about not Liam Neeson fighting wolves, about man's struggle for survival against the wilderness for meaning and life. It's probably the best existential film I've ever seen in a really long time. It has one of the best scenes of a character calling out to God, I think, has ever been filmed. And asking what it all means and why we suffer and what's the point. And man, I'm not kidding, I'm getting misty just thinking about it. I like this movie that much. I kept coming back to it. I really don't think this film got enough love because it was a January release.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, it's like we're already a year out from its release looking, and I just...
Yeah.
Every year you look at people's top fives and they're just filled of films that came out in October and later. And I think that's a damn shame. That people aren't going back and looking at films that came out earlier in the year.
The Grey took number 10 on my list. And it was between that and Chronicle that I went with The Grey.
It's that powerful of a film. And I don't... Liam Neeson hasn't given a performance that strong since Schindler's List, probably.
All of the supporting cast of that movie was
fantastic.
Amazing.
James Badgedale.
Dermot Mulroney. Frank Grillo.
Dallas Roberts. Just a really solid supporting cast of a lot of TV actors. And just everything about that film just worked for me on a lot of levels. So I got to give it to The Grey, my favorite film of the now gone 2012.
Mr. Kyle Davidson, what is the number one film of the year?
Number one film of the year, in my opinion, is, I actually brought it up earlier, the good sci-fi action movie, Looper.
Oh.
Looper is a film that made my 6 through 10.
I loved everything about this movie.
Rewatch it, Dustin.
It failed to make my list.
Rewatch it.
The acting, the directing, the writing. In my opinion, it was one of the most original concepts I've seen in a movie in years. And I loved Rian Johnson.
He's a great director. Not often, you know, you see Hollywood take a chance on an original intellectual property.
And I thought that they did a great job. Joseph Gordon-Levitt did a really good job playing a younger Bruce Willis. And the fact that how insanely alike they made them look.
Well, I think it speaks to his performance, really. It's not even the prosthetics, it's just the mannerisms he keys in on.
Very true.
I like the film a lot, Kyle. I think, did we see this together?
We did.
My number one is going to go to Life of Pi. It was challenging, enlightening. Emotionally, I connected with it more than any other movie this year. Beautiful cinematography, beautiful CGI. Overall, the film itself is just beautiful in almost every way. And I think it's a powerful film, and it really just hit close to home for me. It was challenging, and it made me, you know, think a lot of things. So, it's got to be Life of Pi for me.
Yeah, I cannot recommend that movie enough. I mean, it's a good...
From what I understand, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, your number one and my number one kind of seem to be on opposite sides of the same coin in a lot of ways.
Is that true?
Both films about survival and the nature of God and spirituality and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, so, fair.
Would you say that?
Yeah, I think so.
I like that. I sadly was not able to catch Life of Pi. I'm going to try and catch it before... too long before we get into the meat of this year.
Mm. Get it before the 3D's gone. Yeah.
Really?
Seriously.
Yeah.
The 3D's
really.
That good.
I'd say Dread was probably the best use of 3D this year. But
I agree.
that's just one man's opinion.
I'm so glad that some of my co-hosts tied movies because I want to tie my number one.
You can't tie your number one!
I have number one A, number one B.
All right.
Number one A is Seven Psychopaths. And
6 through 10 for me.
And love that movie, again, about the myth of redemptive violence and how it doesn't actually get us anywhere. And some really brilliant, brilliant writing. And I guess it's in British Invasion because my other number one B is Barbarian Sound Studio. Barely released.
You got to see it, finally.
In the U.S. There are DVDs that have been released in the U.K., and I have friends, and I have means. And
this is the Toby Jones film,
This is
right?
the Toby Jones film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that movie... is amazing. It is everything I like. It's a horror film that is giving a lot of love back to G.I.O. horror of the 1970s, set in the 70s, lovingly reconstructed. It is Toby Jones is very the show to hear all those social media mediums by which you can give us our tops. But you know, this thing is that there's a whole lot of movies out there that we saw. There's a lot of movies we didn't see. And so we do want to just kind of go around one last time for some honorable mentions. And I begin to my right, Mr. Dalton Stewart.
Oh, thank you. real quickly, I want to rattle off my 6 through 10. This is in no particular order, and all of these films I've mentioned on the show, except with the exception of one, so I won't talk about them at length. Sleepwalk With Me came up a few weeks ago. I loved it. 7 Psychopaths, despite my argument with Dustin a few weeks ago, a film I love, and I agree with pretty much everything he has to say about it. Looper, The Raid Redemption, and finally, a film I haven't talked about on the show at all, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Mm.
A film I think that really, like some of the other films on the list, where went into wide release, but somehow just went underappreciated, I felt. A film that really makes you reconsider the things in life that are important. And, again, a sweet film without being saccharine, which is something I'm a big fan of. And also, it's just really funny and darkly comic. Some quick honorable mentions that didn't come up. Safety Not Guaranteed, Lincoln, Ted, believe it or not, just a funny movie. Ted was really funny. Silver Linings Playbook, as mentioned, and The Deep Blue Sea, another film that came up just a few weeks ago. That is the extended list.
Excellent. Any honorable mentions for Kyle Davison?
This is one that didn't get come up, didn't get brought up at all. 21 Jump Street. I knew I'd get a laugh.
I've heard good things. I've heard
you're correct, sir.
Oh, really? Really?
Okay. I haven't seen it, but
it was just a very...
I enjoyed it.
Very enjoyable, very funny. Channing Tatum actually turned in a very surprising performance. Like, he's actually a very funny guy. And, you know, of course, Jonah Hill. Ice Cube was my favorite part of that movie. Ice Cube was just hilarious, you know, stereotypical angry black man. It was just, I loved it. It was it's definitely a movie that you want to watch with a big group of people. You definitely don't get the same kick if you watch it by yourself. Another movie, Ted. Another comedy that I really enjoyed. Santa brought it for me, put it in one of my stockings. And that was the first time I'd ever seen it. And
thank you, Santa.
Thank you, Santa.
It's a weird gift. Much like an anthropomorphic teddy bear.
Jonah Hill calls up Channing Tatum and says, "Hey, I want you to do this movie with me."
Mm.
And Tatum's like, I've never done comedy. I don't think I can do it. And Jonah's like, "Nah, you can do it. It'll be fine." And Tatum replies, "If this fails, I'm going to kill you." So.
This is a true story.
I think I read an interview or something.
That's awesome.
I did enjoy 21 Jump Street. You did make my honorable mentions, but it's fun. My honorable mentions are going to go to Lincoln, Argo, Chronicle, Perks of Being a Wallflower, Moonrise Kingdom, and I think that probably about does it for me.
I keep forgetting that Chronicle came out in 2012. Another good one.
Yeah, that's all I've got.
I want to honorably mention movies I haven't seen this year that I would love to have seen that may have made the list.
Zero Dark Thirty for me.
Zero Dark Thirty.
Definitely.
I think that's for all
Lincoln,
of us.
Lincoln, The Master, a movie called Holy Motors.
I wanted to see Holy Motors.
Really. So there's a lot of other movies. I haven't seen The Grey yet. So there's a lot of movie out there that's really good, solid stuff that I haven't seen. I do want to very quickly, because my favorite genre, I didn't know this about myself until I started doing this podcast, is horror. And so I do have a top 5 horror of 2012 to rattle off very quickly.
Really?
Quickly.
Okay, go.
I want to hear this.
Super, super, super fast. Number 5 is going to be Sinister. Number 4 is The Woman in Black. Number 3 is Beyond the Black Rainbow. Number 2 is Cabin in the Woods. And number 1, I already mentioned, Barbarian Sound
Sinister
Studio.
Was very closely in my 6 through 10, so good pick.
So great stuff. I love me some scary movies, and I didn't realize just how much I did. And that's something that this podcast has done for me. And so my New Year's resolution, dear listener, thank you to the Good Trash Podcast and my esteemed colleagues. I want to just personally take a moment and thank you guys for being so awesome.
Oh, thank you.
And doing this stuff with me and help me love a genre that I forgot I loved. We need to move along and tell you guys how you can have a conversation with us via social media.
I want to talk to these people.
Well, I do.
Okay.
And I also check the Twitter, not just Dalton, just for the record, because I do want to speak to you.
I'm teasing you.
On Tumblr, we're found at goodtrashgenrecast.tumblr.com. We're also found on Facebook. Where is that at, Arthur?
You can find us at www.facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast. One word.
There's that other medium.
Was it?
I don't know.
Oh, Twitter. You're talking about the Twitter? Oh, gosh. I really need to come up with more ways to say it.
It's
dear
like a
listener.
Bird chirping in his ear.
Beep, 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 beep. Oh, what's that? What's that, Lassie?
Caw-caw. Caw-caw.
Unless he was a dog. Ear listener, and yes, I do.
Ear mean, listener.
Yes, because the D is silent. Ear listener, you can follow... D'Artagnan! Ear listener, you can follow us and query us and converse with us on the Twitter at good_trash.
Well, we can also all be found on Twitter. I'm at Dustin_Sells, Sells. Where are you at, Arthur?
You can find me on Twitter at RNDTBLReview, or you can just go check out my website, theroundtablereview.com.
Also, Mr. Dalton Stewart.
I can be found on Twitter at Dalton Stewart, Stuart, one word, and no spaces or underscores. I don't know what that person would be, because it's not me.
And Mr. Kyle Davison.
You can find me on Twitter at KyleDavison90. The K and the D are capitalized, all one word. And you can also find me on MySpace.
Excellent.
Oh, look at you, fancy man.
Keeping up the MySpace. Dear listener, we want to have the conversation with you. We want to hear so much. What are your favorite movies of 2012? We still want to hear your horror trifectas or your horror top fives. But before we go, we need to let you know that next week we'll be watching nothing. Nothing at all. Because we're going to be taking a week off because of the start of school.
We will be restructuring our schedule. Episodes will be dropping on new days.
Things likely.
Yeah, because you can't do them in one day.
It takes a minute.
It turns out these don't actually get recorded right when you hear them. We do them on Thursday, and we can't do that anymore.
And that's for your benefit, audience.
Yeah.
You have to listen to even more of me.
So, we will not be meeting this next time, but the week thereafter, we'll be watching a little film. And that film's called A Fish Called Wanda. And we are very excited to look at that movie here in 2 weeks. You have 2 weeks, dear listener, to take the time.
None of us have seen this movie.
None of us. I mean, there are lots of movies. One thing we discussed last week is that you cannot look down your nose at somebody for not having seen a movie. If you say you like movies and you have to have seen all of these things, everyone's list is different and there are tons of movies.
You also can't look down your nose at someone for not liking a David Cronenberg film, but more on that later.
Moving along. This movie.
A little humble pie. That's how do your own words taste, Dustin.
This movie is going to be a lot of fun, I think, and we look forward to having that conversation with you all here at the Good Trash Dinocast. But until then, go out and see some movies, see a movie with somebody, have a conversation. It's a whole lot of good trash out there, and it's worth seeing, and we'll see you next time.